Hey there, welcome to the Cultivated Family Podcast. I'm Megan Hillica, and this is where we dive into grief and loss, and all that I've learned through the loss of my daughter, Aria. I want to share tools and the things I've learned along the way to help me carry my grief, along with interviews and stories of other people who have experienced pain and heartache in their life, and how we can, as friends, support one another through our tough times so that we can have the joys again as well. You are not alone, my friend, so let's dive in. This is episode number 13, and today I am talking with Monique. She is sharing her knowledge and experience with grief. What I found most fascinating in my conversation with Monique is the fact that she spent years in her grief, unsure of how to work through it. Then she began doing yoga, and it became an outlet and a way to support her grief. It really shows that we all need different ways to support our grief, and what works for one person might not work for another, so it's so important to grieve your own way. Monique has such insight and the ability to put into words what I've been trying to express. Let's listen in. Hi, Monique. Welcome to the Cultivated Family Podcast. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you for having me, Megan.
Yeah, I have been following you on Instagram, and I love all the things you share. And so I'm excited to dive into more about grief and trauma and how it's stored in the body. So can you share your story and how you have come to know grief?
Yeah. It's kind of the foundation for the interests and the things that I share now. So when I was in my 20s, when I was 25, my husband suddenly died. That was back in 2002. And I was very young at the time, and I just met that moment in my life really without a lot of resources or awareness of how to handle something just so debilitating. So my experience of grief was really isolated and really terrifying in many ways. And so that was my first experience with grief. Since then, I've had other experiences. I've had 4 miscarriages, and I've had more, I call them just tools and community and support to help me through those experiences. But the original loss of my husband was very leveling. At that time when he died, I had already had major depression since I was a teenager. And I had been on antidepressants, and it was just a very dark time, and I became suicidal for a couple of those years. And it took me about, it was almost 17 years ago now, but it was about 4 or 5 years before I actually started to find something that worked for me, and that gave me a starting place to begin climbing my way out of that.
So were you saying that with those losses after your husband, that they felt different because you had more tools and community? And did community feel so important that it helped?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a different kind of loss. I was in a different place for each of them, and it didn't change the way it felt for me. They each felt really painful and unique, but I did have more. I knew what worked for me. I knew what helped me to get through things like that, both physically and emotionally. And I knew I had a bigger ability to ask for what I needed, both for myself and from myself and from other people. So it made them, they didn't, you know, I don't think that they were different, but they still were very painful, but I didn't feel, as in my first experience, that there was no life after this. I knew that there was a way through, and there was a way to integrate what I had experienced going into a way forward.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I think it helps you see that you can stand up after loss. Like the first time you're wiped off of your feet, you can't even imagine how you can stand up. Yeah. And none of us would like want to lose again. You know, like when I think of myself, I don't look forward to losing someone else again, but I think you have that deeper understanding that it's possible to be able to live again.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you begin to learn about grief and trauma and how it's stored in the body?
Yeah, so it was quite a long process. The way it worked for me was that I had because I came to that experience of loss already having a history of major depression. I had been on antidepressants for 5 years when my husband died. And I had also been in talk therapy, and I continued on antidepressants for about another 5 years. And to me, at that point in my life, talk therapy and medication wasn't helping me. And about 5 or so years into my loss, I started to practice yoga. And when I started to practice yoga, I was very regular. I went weekly, sometimes a couple times a week. And over time, I started to notice that I was healing. To me, what felt like healing was happening. And there was, to me, a direct correlation between me starting to do yoga and me starting to have some hope and some resilience and starting to feel like I could find a new way through. And it was pretty dramatic, and it definitely wasn't overnight, but I felt like I started to make a way forward, and it was to me a very obvious link. And so it just made me really curious about what was happening, in a little yoga class an hour or two a week that didn't happen in my 10 years on antidepressants and in my years on talk therapy. So about, I don't know, maybe 6 or so years ago, after I had become a yoga teacher, and I just started to move from that foundation of understanding yoga and my experience of yoga into exploring trauma in the body, looking into grief and how that relates to trauma. And it was very fascinating to me. And so over time, I put all of the concepts together, and I made a book out of it because it was very interesting to me to finally have an understanding of why, for me, certain approaches didn't work at the time, and yet something like yoga did. And so that's how I started to dive into this topic. And there were definitely the time that I started looking into it, not any books that I had found that spoke to it the way that I was wanting to understand yoga and emotions in the body. And so I kind of felt like, well, it's not there, so I'm going to create it. And I'm really happy I did, because it's helped me understand not just grief, but emotions, and really the bigger experience of being human and how we survive and find our unique ways forward.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So, how is grief yoga different than regular yoga? Because you do classes for letting go of grief or carrying grief in the body, or however you describe it. But how are they different than just like a regular yoga class that you could go to at the gym?
Yeah. So there is a difference. If I'm teaching a grief specific either yoga class or a workshop, I teach a regular yoga class also, and the way I teach is kind of very similar, but the particulars would be that it's much slower. It's a what's called a trauma-informed foundation, and so that means that even though grief isn't always traumatic, it's often traumatic, and so there's a different focus. In a regular yoga class, often the format is that you go in and you're told, you're just guided through a series of postures, and you're told to focus on your breath and all really useful stuff. In a class that I teach for grief specifically, I'm more interested in giving people options, in helping them find ways basically where they can anchor their attention to things that will feel stabilizing and grounding to them, so that they can choose how they want to explore either sensations in their body or emotions in their body or a specific, maybe a memory or anything that might come up in the process. So I focus a lot on it's a concept called pendulation. And if you think of those big old grandfather clocks where like the big thing goes from one end of the clock and then it swings to the other end, that's kind of the idea. So that instead of telling somebody for the next hour focus on your breath through every single movement, there's ways to focus on different things that have different effects on the mind and the body. And so that's definitely part of how I approach it. A regular yoga class is good. Different styles vary, but in general, they tend to be a little bit faster than a grief-specific yoga class would be. And also, I name it. Like, I don't, I invite every class that I've ever taught, I invite whoever's there to, you're welcome to say the name of your loved one out loud or to yourself in the beginning. And the focus is they're invited to make it on them completely or on whatever they might be wanting to work through or just whatever is useful to them. One man who came to my class when I first started teaching them at a local hospice center, he described it as at the end of a class, he felt like it was like instead of feeling like he was unraveling, like he was unwinding. And to me, that really kind of just put it pretty well because my focus is never to fix grief. I don't think there's anything wrong with people who are grieving. I think it's just this tremendous human experience. And so you come to a yoga class specific for grief sad, and you will probably leave sad. You might feel better, you might not feel better, but that's to me, that's really not the point. The practice often doesn't, it doesn't change that our person has died, but it gives us access and supports what our body's already doing so that we have a better container to hold what we're already asked to hold. So I definitely don't think of it in terms of, you know, yoga for grief, like yoga for back pain, or even that, you know, that there's anything to fix or release. I think of it more in terms of integration and how do we support what's already, your body's already doing the best it can. How can we help, you know, help it along?
I love how you framed that because there is no moving on or getting over or, you know, like letting go of our person, our, like my child or your husband or your miscarriages, your children. There's no letting go of that, but the grief, I love how you frame that. It's like supporting and helping versus like fixing yeah. because we can't fix grief.
Yeah. And I would just add to that, I think, you know, everything I've learned about the body and particularly when we have traumatic experiences of grief, the body is so intelligent. And when I say the body, obviously the mind is included in the body and they work together, but it has its own intelligent way of processing things, which is often slower than the mind. But there are definitely ways that we can either fight that process or support that process. I remember a few years into my experience of grief that I didn't do yoga at that time and I didn't have a lot of body awareness, but I actually had a very visceral sense that I remember thinking to myself that my body and my being wanted to heal, but I didn't want them to because in my mind, I wasn't yet able to comprehend that healing didn't mean leaving him behind or betraying our love or our relationship. To me, healing felt like if I heal, then I'm letting him go. Then I'm saying, you know, it wasn't what I wanted it to be, or I didn't love as deeply as, you know, I did. And so I really struggled with that. But I could feel that there were big parts of me that wanted to heal. And I was actively fighting it. Like I was actively holding it back. And so, you know, my body was working for me anyway. I was just, you know, making it a little bit harder than for good reasons. You know, that's the process. But I have such an appreciation for, you know, we do have a lot of control and ability to support what's already happening, basically.
Yeah, I think many people will resonate with that because there's always the fear that if you allow yourself to process and start to take action of healing or learning how to live with this, that you're forgetting them. But you can combine them together, that you're not forgetting them. They're always there, and that you also can live a full life still.
Yes, I think that's why I've just come to really appreciate it as an integration, because, you know, it's not like an arm, you know, your arm gets injured, or you're not going to chop off your arm. And any of our relationships, the ones that have not ended in death, they're always a part of us, you know, they always impact some part of our personality or how we go forward, and they're always with us. And so I don't see it as being any different. But I think that it can be very, very challenging to allow ourselves to be happier or even begin that healing process, because they're not in the new future. And so that can feel really, that contradiction can be very hard to allow.
Yeah. So on Instagram, you had shared a post about the difference between trauma and grief, and it really resonated with me because I have, or was diagnosed with PTSD, and now my symptoms, I've worked pretty hard to get my symptoms pretty low now, mm-hmm. but I struggled with separating PTSD and grief. What is trauma? What is grief? Can you talk a little bit about that post? Because you said very distinctly, which I found so helpful, what is trauma and what is grief?
Yeah. So they often overlap, but they are not the same. And grief, as I said, is often traumatic, but it's not always traumatic. And it's good to understand the distinction. One lady I spoke with one time, she said that her experience of losing her husband was very traumatic. And she said she went to her therapist and she was like, I need to do work with the trauma first. And then, you know, the grief needs to wait, basically. And I really appreciated that insight on her part in the midst of that, because trauma is something that can be worked with, and a lot of the aspects of trauma can over time be you don't forget what's happened to you, but you can basically have a completed cycle of healing with that. And grief, as we know, will always be with us. It's not an event that we need to necessarily get over. And so, yeah, I put that post because I think that sometimes we don't realize, one, that our grief may be traumatic, or two, that they're different things. And I know when I didn't appreciate the distinction for many years till I started to look into these topics, because my husband died suddenly, and I, for years after, would have, you know, these kind of loops where I couldn't get certain visuals out of my mind. And it was, I started to feel like I was in a prison in my mind, which was very scary. And, but I didn't know, like that is, you know, grief, of course, we have memories, but that kind of what's called the loop is different. And that's something that often accompanies traumatic experiences. But that post, I'll go over it really quickly. What some of the differences between grief and trauma are that grief, the emotion that accompanies it is more sadness, and trauma is going to be more of terror. Grief, a lot of times talking will help if we can tell our story or just be listened to or talk about our memories. And with trauma, a lot of times it's impossible to talk. Our bodies just don't have the capacity or the ability to verbalize a story around or make sense of what's happened to us. And there's different ways that sometimes it shows up, where we might think that there's a lot of, I wish I would have done this, or I wish I would not have done this. And trauma is a little bit more focused on if I could have prevented it, what it was my fault. There's a little bit of those nuanced differences. And grief, a lot of times, can be supported and helped by letting our emotions have free, you know, being able to move freely through our body, being able to talk about it. And trauma is the healing modalities, especially these days, are more focused on co-regulation, moving the energy through the body and cycling it through, and being able to integrate those experiences. So there's a lot of overlap, but they're definitely different, and it's good to kind of know that, I think, because often grief I find that a lot of times grief is the losing somebody that we love, that we're very close to, is a lot of times the first time that we've ever had to face an uncomfortable, overwhelming emotion that we weren't able to run from. So everything else in our life, you know, that we were able to escape it through a host of different things. And so we're not ever really asked to sit with pain and discomfort. And with grief, there's no real running from it. And so it can be the first time that we're asked to sit with this, and we often don't know how to. And we might not understand that depending on how we lost our person, that there definitely can be layers of trauma that we don't just have to suffer through. Those can be supported and helped through a number of different therapies and practices, and that can further support our ability to handle our grief and start to find and ask for what we need to help us through our experience.
Yeah, I love the differences that you shared. I definitely noticed after my daughter Aria died that I struggled with the fact of trying to save all my kids, keep them all alive, and also being able to grieve my daughter. So I like felt like my trauma and my PTSD wasn't allowing me to grieve in the way I wanted to. Yeah. So I relate with that lady who had said that she wanted to deal with the trauma first, because can't even face the grief until the trauma is dealt with.
Yeah. And it can make I think of, in my case at least, it made, I think, the grieving process maybe a bit harder than it had to be, because I didn't know that there were certain things that I was calling grief, you know, that I was thinking this is part of grief. That definitely had components of it, but it was more, you know, the way that trauma is often defined is anything that overwhelms our ability to cope, anything that overwhelms our resources. And so things happen to people that are traumatic events, but people are not traumatized from them. So it depends on the person and how it lands for the person, whether a certain event or thing is traumatizing to them. And so it's definitely good to kind of create some more awareness around that, because that way people don't have to suffer more, you know, more than we have to, if there's a way to work with some of the, yeah, definitely things like PTSD and some of the other effects that come along with those kinds of losses.
Yeah. So how do you begin to let go of trauma or grief or any of the emotions or things that can get trapped in your body? How do you begin to process that or let it go?
Yeah, so I often say I find it, especially in the yoga world and in our culture, that there is a lot of emphasis on letting go. Like that's like this cure-all of like, just let it go and move on. And I don't really subscribe to that. You know, I don't think of it as semantics, but I don't really subscribe to that idea that we need to release or let go. But I do think that there is these energies that need to move through our body, and that can help us integrate basically our experiences. But like we talked about before, it's the grief is not going to change itself, but our capacity to hold our grief can change and can be buoyed and can be supported depending on what we have in our world and what we have access to. And that's a big thing also, because depending on basically how privileged we are can change what we have access to. So you know, a lot of times people don't have access to things like therapy or like a yoga class or even time. You mentioned like in your situation how you had your other children that you had to care for, and that you don't have time. You don't have it's not just all about you, where you can do everything that you need to help support yourself. And so to get more to your question, how do we start to, I think of it as like support our body's efforts to bear up under our grief. And that's where I think a lot of embodied practices and therapies can be really useful, because grief, I think of as what's called biopsychosocial, where yes, there's an experience of grief in our bodies, there's an experience of grief in our minds, right? The psychology of it. And our grief is also affected by our social system. So our society, how our communities and our society respond to our grief, affect our experience of it. And when we think about grief, there's a lot of grief itself is not an emotion, but there's a lot of emotions that accompany it, kind of like under this umbrella, right? There's anger, there's sadness, there's a whole anxiety, there's a whole host of emotions that come with grief. And that are related to it, and that make up part of its makeup. And what we know about emotions from emotion science and neuroscience is that they move through our bodies in many fascinating ways. And the link that I think is pretty interesting is that because the energy of the emotions is always wanting to move, right? Energy, we think of any kind of energy, it wants to move. Let me close my window because it's getting a little loud. If you think of something like love, you know, when people fall in love, they want to share it. They want to talk about it. They want to express it. And nobody ever says, you know, can you go please do that in your therapist's office? Or can you be a little bit, you know, tone it down. All that love is just it's too much for me. I mean, so we all get that. We get that, like, you know, people have weddings and it's like a wonderful thing and everyone's happy. And grief is no different. It's a valid emotion. It's not an emotion, but it's a valid experience. And it's something that needs to take up space and that needs to be expressed, all the things that go with it, just like an experience of love. And so that's where I think that I have found that it can be really useful to move some of that, or allow to be moved some of that energy that comes with it, or some of the emotions that come with it. There's a lot of anger, right? And anger has a very big charge in the body. And I think of it as like letting it move so it can move in, it can move out. Sometimes, you know, we feel better, sometimes we feel worse, but the stuckness of it and the holding it in, if you think about, like, you know, the lump in our throats is a good example of it. We can literally feel like the energy in our throats when we are holding something back and holding something down. And so I often, you know, think like we don't really need to let it go. We need to let it out. And there's so many different ways to do that. But I think I got a little bit off topic, but that's kind of the idea of how it can often show up in our bodies. And when we are able to allow some of that movement and some, you know, things like crying and also embodied practices that supports the physical moving of the body and also the integrating it with the mind can be very supportive, because our bodies are ultimately, they're wired to survive. And so the way that I often explain it is that our bodies have a few different defense mechanisms that they drop into when we are faced with either a real physical threat or a perceived threat, like an emotional threat. And they're going to do whatever it takes to survive. And depending on what we have access to, like we talked about before, will change how the body and the mind will respond. And so often things that look like, you know, like things like isolation or things like depression, a lot of times things that look like, oh, my body's failing me, or I have pains in my chest, or my lungs, you know, feel so compromised, I can't breathe, right? That's a common complaint. They feel like things that are going wrong. And yes, they're things that aren't optimal, but they're really like, when you look at the physiology and the what's happening in the body when it feels under threat or when it feels overwhelmed, and unsupported is that this is, it's just trying to keep us getting up every morning. It's trying to keep us surviving, basically. And I'll let you ask another question, because that's
I really resonate with so much of what you're saying, and it feels like stuff I'm saying over and over to people trying to help them understand that, but I feel like you said it so clearly compared to what I try to say.
Well, I appreciate it. There's a lot of different aspects to that, but that's kind of the overview of, you know, of it.
Yeah. No, and I never realized, I wasn't ever aware of feeling things in my body until, like, when I did my EMDR therapy, we would focus on, you know, where am I feeling stuff in my body? And I never realized, I never paid attention until I started to pay attention, notice. Right? And then you're like, whoa, there is this thing here that's in my chest. And if I focus on it, it's there and I can help release it, or like move through my body. I like how you describe that. So what are ways that someone could allow grief to move through their body and support their grief by themselves in their home? Maybe somebody who doesn't have resources, maybe somebody who just wants to be at home. So what is there some specific exercise they could do? Do you have any ideas for like a yoga practice that they could do at home by themselves or something like that?
Yeah. So I don't, in the book that I published, there's about 100 pages of the book is practices. And, there a range of practices definitely could fall under the category of yoga, but it talks about breathing. It talks about different organs in the body, how they might be affected, ways that we can support their function. So there are things that people can do at home to support their body's efforts and their mind's efforts really to bear up under the weight of grief. There are, you know, I usually where I like to start with people is having them scan their body for what they sense in their body. And I have, when I do workshops, I have a handout, and it's basically a diagram of a body, a front and a back, kind of like you might get at a physical therapist's office. But there's basically you want to be in a place where you feel safe and ground yourself, find something you can anchor yourself to that makes you feel really supported. Maybe somebody else is in the room that you feel comfortable with. And then there's a way to kind of go through your body and just sense what you feel. And it might not be related to your grief. You might feel like it's directly related, but it gives you kind of a starting place as to where are you starting from? Because that's really the only place to move forward is from where you are. And I find that a lot of times we're so in where we would like to be, or so in where we were, that it can be kind of a tricky thing to drop into. This is how I'm actually feeling, and not how I feel like I should feel, or how I've been telling everybody I'm feeling. So that's kind of, I have up on my website, I have videos, I have their yoga, a variety of yoga videos that are free. And I have those body map your grief body maps that people can print out and walk through the practice. But
so where can people get that from?
Those ones are on the website. It's thegriefpractice.com. And there's videos that are about an hour. There's some that are very, very what is called supported yoga. So they're not really fast. There's not a lot of movement. And then there's a couple practices that are more active movements. You're going to be moving more. And so that I kind of had an experience myself where I didn't. I needed community in my grief, but I didn't know how to ask for it, just because of the way it unfolded for me. So when I started going to a yoga class, what I found is that it was this really kind of weird but interesting place where it's like you can be alone together. So I could go and move. And I didn't have to talk about my story. Nobody really knew anything about me, but I could be with other people and I could have my own experience and also feel like I was accompanied because I had had such an isolated experience of grief. And that was very powerful support for me until I got to a place where I could start making connections and felt more capable of making new friendships and asking for what I needed. And one of the biggest things that can be lost, especially just because grief is not really understood or supported in our society and communities, is other human beings. And I would say that's probably the number one thing that can help people. And also maybe depending on their circumstances, maybe the hardest thing to get, because people often don't understand us, or they rush us, or, I had many people who were trying to help me, but it wasn't resonating with me. And so I felt like I wasn't being helped. And so it can be very challenging to get the right kind of connection. But thankfully now in our day and age, we have so many online and other kinds of, so many books out and so many resources that it makes it a little bit easier, to find that connection. But, I also really understand, that feeling of like, I do not, not feeling comfortable going out into the world. And so that's why for what I offer, I like to offer it in a way where people can do it in the privacy of their home. Like a big motivation behind me creating the book was that I know that books are sometimes we just can't let people in, but we will let a book in. And if I know, like, we can read stories from a book, and stories from other people who have had similar experiences can be really comforting because it makes us feel less alone, but we might not be able to handle or ready to open up and have a conversation with somebody about our story or to hear their story. But things we can do in the privacy of our own home can be, can feel a lot safer and be a smaller way to start getting what we need and to get us to a place where we feel more ready to, interact with real people, or maybe go to a, reach out and go to therapy or go to a class or things like that.
Yeah, totally. I think that community and access to community, or even knowledge or understanding that you're not alone, is so important. I keep thinking about that in-person community is so, for me, talking with people in real life who have experienced the same thing as me is so helpful, but it's not always available to somebody. Yeah. And it's also not, maybe what you said, they're not able to talk in person. So it is a huge blessing to have like online stuff and books and ways where we can kind of see that, oh, actually I'm not crazy. I'm not losing it. That it's okay to be here. And then maybe that gives you the courage to reach out because you know that what you're experiencing is a normal response to grief and to loss. So
yes, a lot of times it definitely feels like we're the only ones that are going crazy, or we're the only ones that feel this way. Often when I do workshops on grief in the body, it's really interesting to see that people are surprised that they're not the only one that felt something specific in their body or that had a certain kind of experience. And to me, that's really where the magic is, because that's, when we feel isolated, a lot of things can start to go downhill. And so it's a very challenging thing. But I do think, that's one of the reasons why for me, the sort of the normal approaches with therapy and medication didn't work for me initially, was because I just wasn't in a place where I could talk my way through my experience. And so I won't go into it too much, but there's two ways that our brains are so amazing. And so they process information differently depending on how the information is given to the mind. And when we talk, things, you know, like how I was in talk therapy, that's, it's called a top-down way of giving information to a person and their brain. And so it's very useful, but sometimes I think we've all had the experience of we can't talk ourselves out of how we feel. We can tell ourselves, don't feel that, or you don't feel that, but we still feel it. And there's a very good reason for that. But things like yoga, movement-based practices, and are what's called a bottom-up approach to the brain. And so they give the brain maybe the same information, but in a different way. And so for me, in my experience, that's what I needed. I needed to come in through the bottom up because I just wasn't ready to integrate talking, and I just wasn't ready for it yet. And so when I got to a place where I felt like I was ready for that, then I could start to make sense of my experience, and it was helpful to blend the two. But it was really, I think, nice to finally have found a way where I could move through my experience without having to put it into this like little box with a bow on it, because it's too messy. For many of us, it's too messy. And, when I first started going to yoga, the end of the class, there's a resting pose. And for like the first year, I would just cry through, not in the class itself, but like at the end of the class. And I never really understood why. And, you know, now I understand why, because I wasn't really thinking about my grief as I was doing my regular yoga class, but my body had a lot of stuff that it was, you know, moving through. And, so it was just a very interesting experience. And, and there's a good reason why certain things don't work for us at a certain time. And then at other times in our experience, they might be the best fit. So it's just nice to have options.
Yeah. And that goes to show how we all grieve differently, and to be open to ourselves. Like, we don't need to look to somebody else that how this is how we're supposed to grieve, but how are we grieving? How does our body need to grieve? How do we need to grieve ourselves versus comparing to someone else? And just being open to the different ways that would work for you.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point that you just made, because when we come to grief, we have a whole life behind us. And our stories of grief don't start from the time the person died. They start with like everything we were ever taught, you know, from childhood on, about how do we handle difficult emotions? How do we ask for what we need? I mean, there's a whole host of things. And so we come to this experience and we kind of think like, now I have grief, and how do I fix it and like, you know, get on with my life or get back to who I was. And it's very unique because we're all so unique with our histories and things that have happened to us before or during. It is very, unfortunately, I feel like, you know, it would be nice if we had like this cookie cutter, like do this and, you know, but I think humans have amazing capacity to heal. And thankfully now in our day and age, we're having more respect and awareness for that, but it's very unique, and there's just no shortcut around, you know, diving in and doing the work. And also taking that on slowly, because, you know, we wouldn't go to like the gym and pick up 100 pounds of weight, like if we'd never went to the gym before. And it's the same thing. There's times where if it feels too overwhelming, there's a reason for that. So like what feels accessible, and it might be like the smallest thing, but, we don't have to take it on all at once. And I know that for me, that was a big, in the early years in my grief, that I felt like I was shutting down because I couldn't feel anything. Cause I felt like if I go there emotionally, like I will never come back. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any tools to help me, you know, put one foot in the water and then step back and go like, how did that feel? I didn't have any of that. And so all I knew was like, we'll jump in the middle of the ocean or not at all. And there's lots of, you know, 5 pounds and then 15 pounds. And there's lots of ways to move into our experiences that are you know, and move out of them and then start to, you know, approach things at a different time or in a different way when we're ready without having to take it all on. And I think maybe that's often not what people want to hear, because they want to hear like, okay, 2 years, do this and that, and then you'll be done. And it's a lot, you know, it's a lifetime thing, and not in a bad way. It's not like, it doesn't mean you have to, you know, be sad your whole life. It just, but it does mean that, you know, like it will resurface and change in different ways for different people, depending on so many things. And just, you know, it's just, I have so much respect for the human, you know, just experience. And I think it is like this bigger conversation beyond grief, which is, you know, what does it mean to be human, and how do we move through these really big challenges?
Yeah, totally. And I think you kind of have to face that when you lose somebody you love on an extreme level. That's when you start to, for me, I've started to like the whole human experience of love and loss and grief and what, I get that.
Yeah, so, it often brings up a whole host of other things.
Oh, totally, totally. Yeah. So at the end, I ask these questions for cultivating compassion. So what is one thing you could offer to someone who is struggling and feels really alone in their pain?
I would, you know, I just often think, be gentle with yourself. I guess I have two things. Be gentle with yourself and find your people. Because I know that it's really easy to be hard on ourselves, and to try to even rush ourselves, not even other people rushing us, but your body and your mind are doing everything they can to support your experience, and to try to keep you getting up. And and then, you know, like the second half to that is do whatever you can to connect. And that might not be reaching out to other people. It might be reading somebody else's story or connecting to people unrelated to grief at all, but just humans. It's a little too much to go into, but the connecting to other humans is one of the most healing things we have as human beings. So I think it's sometimes underappreciated, but it's hugely important.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think when you say be kind to yourself, I think we are the hardest on ourselves, and especially with grief, we have a way of thinking that it should be this way and we're not doing it that way, and kind of beat ourselves up. So what is one book that has encouraged you and helped you?
The most recent book that I found really wonderful is called The A to Z Healing Toolbox. And it's a compilation of so many resources by a woman who experienced traumatic grief. And it definitely talks about aspects of trauma. And it just gives such a host of and variety of tools that it's kind of nice to have a resource like that where somebody can just, you know, get one word or two word idea and it, you know, decide if it resonates with them or not. But I find that it's a really wonderful support, and people can find something that, you know, something to move from there or jump off from there.
All right. I'll have to check that one out. Did you say it's A to Z Healing to Love?
Healing Toolbox.
Oh, Toolbox. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I heard that wrong. Healing Toolbox.
Susan McNabb, Hannafin. Okay. McNabb. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. What do you wish someone who has never been through a heavy personal loss would understand?
Healing is not linear is what I think I would like the world to understand. Particularly when it comes to something like grief, I think it's very hard for people to comprehend that. And if, you know, and be, and if they can't allow for that, for the complexity of grief, then they can't support their people who are grieving. And I think that, you know, the best thing we can do to help other people in their pain is get comfortable with being uncomfortable with our pain. Because if we can't even sit with ourselves in our own tremendous discomfort and pain, how can we possibly sit with somebody else? And as many of us know, that's sometimes often just the best thing anybody can do, is just accompany us without trying to fix us. And that takes, every human being has that capacity, but it requires a level of digging deep that many people, unfortunately, just aren't willing to do. So we need more of that.
Oh, I totally agree. I seriously resonate with so much what you have said, and I'm sure people listening will resonate with a lot of what you said, because you definitely, you can tell when somebody has experienced grief and understands it. And so I connect with you on that. So thank you for being here, and thanks for sharing all the wisdom and tools and, I, you know, ways of looking at grief that you have shared.
Well, I'm happy to have the conversation. Thank you for having me.
So how can people connect with you and follow you on your journey?
Yeah, so there's a few different ways. I post almost daily to my Instagram page, and there's I've been doing that for a couple years now. It's The Grief Practice on Instagram. Lots of stuff on there, science, story, yoga. And there's a couple other ways. I do in-person workshops, mostly in California right now. And then the website, thegriefpractice.com, I've really worked hard to make that a resource that people can, like we talked about the yoga, there's a place on there to share your story or to read other people's stories. And then the book, I published it earlier this year, and it's a really beautiful book. And I basically made a book that I didn't see out there and that I felt like I would have liked to have had in my experience of grief.
All right. Thanks. I'll make sure I link those all so people can find you.
Thanks so much, Megan.
Thanks for joining me on another episode of the Cultivated Family Podcast. While this episode is over, you can continue to join me in conversation on Instagram or Facebook at Cultivated Family. I would love to see you there.